Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Glenn Falconstein from Falcon Screen, and we are joined by Sydney filmmaker Chris Evans.
Sometimes. Hey, guys.
Freelance writer and critic for Rotten Eru.
Always. Hey, guys.
And Sydney Underground Film Festival director Stefan Popescu. Stefan, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's exciting. It's tomorrow night.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy how it comes around.
Yes, it has been a year, and we're very excited because the Sydney Underground Film Festival is screening at the Factory Theatre from tomorrow night through to Sunday.
That's right, yeah. 4 days of intense cinema.
Intense. That is, but it's not just intense. It's fun. It's informative. There's some stuff that, as I've learned, is very lighthearted, and some stuff that is the complete opposite of that.
Yeah. And this time we have... we got workshops, but we also got a conference for the first time, so it's discursive as well.
Yeah, one of my friends actually is a visual artist, kind of PhD, and he's doing, and he's part of the conference, so yeah,
oh,
he invited me that I should be there. So yeah, I'm getting my academic hat on.
Yeah, we actually have Steve Shaviro and Sean Cubitt giving keynotes, albeit video keynotes, but still keynotes unless it was good enough for being able to get them. So.
It's a really good lineup this year.
Oh, cool.
I've never been as interested in as many films, I think.
Oh, cool. Yeah, like we felt that as film nerds.
Yeah.
It's always really hard to tell because, yeah.
I felt it. In the past, there's often like, oh, that sounds unusual. I want to give that a shot. But there's a lot this year that have me hooked.
Oh, cool.
Reading through the selection, yeah.
Awesome.
And I'm excited too because I'm going to be spending the entire weekend there starting tomorrow night. And before we get into the screenings and what's on air this year, we just want to know, it's the Underground Film Festival. What makes it underground? What is it?
okay, so for us, underground, because we're operating in the tradition of underground, so New York underground, San Francisco sort of underground, Sydney underground, actually, Ubu Films. So we have a tradition here in Sydney of more experimental sort of weirdo films that push the boundaries. So we look for films that push the boundaries, just doing something different. They're alternative, they're independent. And even if they got a mainstream element, as long as they're trying to do something different, like Mandy, for example, it's mainstream, but it's really doing something different.
It's so touching on experimental cinema of the 60s and 70s, I think.
Totally. It's a aesthetic. Really nice pastiche of that sort of... what do you call it? Telekinetic sort of 70s stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually, we're starting with the reverse here because this is a closing night film, but we caught this very recently in Melbourne. And this is the first time it will screen to a Sydney audience.
That's right, yeah.
And it's one of the more ethereal films I've ever seen. And unlike anything, well, not entirely unlike anything Nicolas Cage has done, but on an extreme end of what Nicolas Cage is used to.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange to have Nicolas Cage in it. You know, like he's anchoring, he brings the meme element and the trash
element. Oh, totally. Yeah, and that's what I really loved about it. It's almost like Knock Knock with Keanu Reeves. Like, there was a weird sort of intertextuality and self-reflexivity to it. And strangely, I think Nicolas Cage has found his genre, you know, this sort of weirdo 70s pastiche stuff, a bit grindhousey or something. Yeah.
Oh, I thought of Drive Angry and things like that, but way more avant-garde aesthetically.
Totally.
Drive Angry. Dear me, that was not part of that marathon, so it should have been. So we've started with the end of the festival, which will be on Sunday night at the Factory Theatre, but we want to start at the beginning. You are opening with a New Zealand comedy of sorts.
Yeah, it's a weirdo comedy, but a comedy nonetheless, Mega Time Squad, and it's... starring Johnny Bra. He was in What We Do in the Shadows. So if you've liked that sort of humor, and Tim Van Damme, who, if I'm not mistaken, had done Deathgasm.
It is a very severely underrated film.
It's one of the best, I think, one of the best sort of New Zealand comedies, and really fast paced. So this has got that same sort of humor, that sort of pacing. So you definitely got your, you know, so there's something about New Zealand humor. It's like Australians really love it, I think. I don't know what it is. I wonder if it's the other way around, if New Zealand is like our humor or not. But
they keep smashing the rugby union, as we learned this weekend, so we just have to laugh at something.
I think New Zealanders aren't getting as much Australian humour exported to them as we're getting New Zealand humour exported to us. I think we're not confident in our abilities at the moment. It seems like New Zealand are on fire.
Yeah, and I think they're allowed to have character in their films. The New Zealand Film Commission doesn't sort of shave off the edges. They let them sort of be that sort of rough and...
Right.
Yeah, and this is absolutely like that sort of, lots of swearing. It's a sort of suburban sort of heist film, time travel sort of film. Yeah, it's really weird, yeah.
Well, we're going to play a short clip from this movie now. I'm very keen. It's only 24 hours away.
Yeah, and the filmmakers are... they should be on the plane right now because Tim Van Damme and Johnny Brahe are coming down with it, and so they'll be there for Q&A on opening night and stuff and to present it. So.
Incredible. Here is a bit from Mega Time Squad.
Who's this?
This is Johnny. It's bloody dynamic.
Holy shit! I never thought anybody would be stupid enough to steal from pirates.
Well, you never met us then, did you?
That sounds great. Oh my god, and I like that they don't shave off the edges, because otherwise we would not have films like this.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Australian film is so bloody boring most of the time.
It's safe. Yeah. And that doesn't...
Middle brow as hell. You
know? Yeah, that's like one-way track to commercial death.
Yeah, exactly.
My favorite part of SOF always is the late night all-you-can-eat cartoon cereal.
Well, cool. I think it's interesting because it seems like SOF has learnt the hard way that its demographic will not turn up early.
Yeah, exactly. You picked that one up. Yeah. So for the past few years, we had the morning one and, had a few people. But late night, it's selling out, so it's great.
Perfect. Yeah. I think last year might have been the first one I thoroughly enjoyed it. I sat there with Crispies as was my guilty pleasure as a kid and just shoved them down and enjoyed crazy cartoons.
Did you do the Saturday morning cartoons?
I did. I did both.
I would have picked it.
Yeah. It was Inspector Gadget, and there was like Scooby-Doo and... my favorite, Rocko's Modern Life.
Yep. Great show.
Which is having a bit of a resurgence lately. But I'm really curious to pick up on this point. You talked about shaving off the edges in Australian film versus New Zealand cinema. Because I know every year, and this year is no exception, there are films about censorship. But in a broader way, the festival is about tackling sentiments of what is censorship in Australia and around the world.
Yeah, totally. And I think... I mean, we always do play an Australian film or two, and we've got like Bugs this year, which is one that hasn't shaved the edges off. But I think anything that goes through formalized funding streams and is subject to commentary from those funding bodies like usually shaves the edges off. So, but in terms of we definitely have some films that challenge. If that's what you're getting at, challenge censorship. Definitely, we have some. We've got Trauma this year, which is, in my opinion, one of the most hardcore films that have reached our shores. Like, it will give a Serbian film a run for its money.
I spoke to a critic who'd seen this. I haven't seen it yet, but he said it was the most hardcore film he had seen in recent memory.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah,
I'm very curious. See, this is screening on Friday, Saturday.
It is. It's on Friday night. That's if the OFLC don't stop the screening.
I've got to contact them if you want us to stir things up.
Yeah, just the film buckle, pick it outside. It's like no. You can't get that ruling there in time. Yeah.
But it's definitely challenging. It's definitely scenes that are just like will blow your mind. And I mean, it's contextualized, and I can justify it. And I don't think it should be banned. I think it's an R film. Some people may not agree though. So yeah, I think there's a debate to be had there. So.
But what's great about Sydney Underground is it always screens those kinds of films. You know, it keeps the conversation going rather than just there being no doorway and the orthodoxy that we're presented by the government remaining unchallenged.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, that's always been sort of one of our mandates, is just screen anything that's legal. Just doesn't matter how, as long as I'm not going to jail for a film, but I'll sort of push it till the point that you can't push no more. Yeah.
And I'm glad we get to see it, because I don't think we'd see the type of films we see at SUFF anywhere else.
This will not be screened anywhere else in Australia, and it's brilliantly made. It's kind of like a slasher sort of film, but with this weird political context of the Pinochet regime. So yeah, it's kind of like merging sort of torture porn with like a sort of historical context. Yeah, political historical context. So.
Amazing. So what are some of the films at the festival you're most excited about?
Okay, let me think for a sec. You know what? Magic of Gru.
Yeah.
I'm really, really happy about it. Because for me, ever since Tommy Wiseau's come onto the scene, I think not only has he carved out a... I know Ed Wood like started that, but no one really thought it was commercially viable to be a shit filmmaker. And not to say that I think Stephen Gru's a shit filmmaker per se, but he's got talents to get there. and you just have to be a right combination of energies, and he's got those right combination of energies. So much so that, yeah, Jack Black was so fascinated by his stuff and decided to act in his film. And so we're premiering that film as well, and the companion film. And the reason I'm excited and scared at the same time is because... as soon as we said that do the world premiere for The Unexpected Race, which is this guy's that is in the doco. The doco is about him being sort of a mediocre, bad/bad filmmaker. So we decided to look at his film. Once we programmed that, next minute he's coming out on a plane. He's like, "All right, I've booked a flight coming out," and I'm like, "Oh, okay." And then because he's coming out, then the director of the documentary is coming out.
Right.
And then I'm like, hey, if we're going to do this, Jack Black in the doco said he's going to come to the premiere. I want to just get Jack Black out here. So we did put the word out through Jared. And I'm sure Jack Black's busy, but you just never know.
You never know. And here is a clip from The Insufferable Gru.
Or The Magic of Gru.
Did you know that a whip crack is the tip of the whip breaking the speed of sound, and it makes a little sonic boom? Or so I've been told in science class. Whip crack.
Is there like a movie that you've like always wanted to make that you haven't been able to?
There you go. Unexpected Race.
My name is Lythorian, and my people are elves.
It's a drama.
So that is The Insufferable Gru.
There's a great line at the end of that trailer. And I think that shows his directorial style.
We can jump forward ever so... Oh, here we go.
Is it the... Oh, no.
Oh, that's a bit of a...
That was his relaxation videos or something. Oh. He did meditation videos.
He just decided to casually insert into the trailer. As you do.
Hearing about relaxation videos just then put me in mind of another film I was interested in, Relaxer.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing
great,
segue.
Great segue.
That sounds great.
Have you seen it?
I tried.
It's amazing.
We'll get to that later. All right. I have not seen it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, for people who haven't listened, it's about people trying to beat Billy Mitchell's score in, is it Pac-Man or Donkey Kong?
Pac-Man,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
You might know Billy Mitchell, though, from The King of Kong. He has high scores on a whole bunch of different video games, which has been a controversial subject of late of arguments about whether he cheated to get them. But yeah, this is about some guys trying to beat his score without leaving the couch. It sounds like... avant-garde stoner
comedy. And there's something it's like because it's two brothers, so yeah. There's this weird relationship, like the big brother makes the little brother sit there because he thinks he's a loser, so it's like, no, you got to break this score, and then the brother does all sorts of mean stuff like pee in his milk and stuff like that. so it's a really for being shot 99% in one room. It's amazing.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah. I'm keen.
Yeah. I'm intrigued about another film that's screening at the same time as Insufferable Gru, which is Bruce LeBruce's Misandrits.
Ah, yes.
And that's, yeah, how do we talk about that one? It's interesting.
It's Yeah, well, I mean, the basic story is like a group of lesbian sort of feminists decide to disrupt the patriarchy, or plan to overthrow the patriarchy by producing lesbian porn, which is awesome.
Wow. And a slightly different change of tact. We are talking about Spirits of the Air because we have, very generously, thanks to Stefan and the Sea Underground Film Festival, tickets to give away to the screening later this week. So if you are interested in tickets, please do be the first to email in very quickly. The email is glenn@falconscreen.com, so glenn@falkenscreen.com, and for some of those tickets. But first, can you tell us a little bit about the film?
So it's a remastering of and re-release of Alex Proyas's first film. So and it's absolutely gorgeous because it's been remastered at 4K, and it's basically set in this post-apocalyptic sort of space, and in this weird little outback hut, and they try to get out of there, and they can't get out of there because there's mountains, and the only way would be to fly over it. So there's this thing of developing a flying machine. So it's and you've got this crazy sister that's a bit schizophrenic and thinks that the guy who's come there, a guy sort of comes into their life, and he's helping the brother make the machine, but she thinks that he's like an evil spirit, and so there's this all sorts of tensions in there, and it's very beautiful. And we're lucky enough to have Alex Proyas actually present the film and do a Q&A and do a masterclass as well, so we're very lucky.
I'm interested in a lot of the masterclasses you've got on this year. Some pretty interesting stuff lined up.
Definitely. I mean, in terms of bigger ones, it's, yeah, Alex Proyas, and then we've got the Chinese-Australian co-pro one. Mm. So it's really strange that we got these high-end sort of producers and directors sort of coming to our festival. So
it's great. I remember last year, it was a wonderful environment. We're going to talk about the environment more of stuff lately. But yes, tell us about the more about the classes you have this year. It's running, one's running throughout the length of the day.
One of the workshops, or?
Yes, I think.
No, the conference is running the length of Friday.
Yes.
Yeah, and the rest are they're one and a half. They're sort of like the same as film sessions. So you could kind of watch a film, do a workshop, then go back to another film. Yeah. So, but it is running, sorry, the whole of Saturday and Sunday. So, so we have everything from low budget filmmaking with Lulu Keating. She's a Canadian female.
Yeah, I was really interested in this one because it's a subject close to my heart, how to make films with little or no money.
Well, she succeeded her whole life to
right.
To make films and live off it, you know, who at a low budget level, like, and not compromise artistically. Like, you just don't get that. And part of it is just because she's just so skilled and charming and whatever not. But part of it as well is that Canada, I think, allows, creates situations where you can do that, you know, like.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, we had the guys from Kino Sydney on the show. And, you know, Kino is something that comes from Canada. And if you see the stuff that those people create at the Montreal Kino events with no money or resources, it is insane how creative they're allowed to be and the kind of stuff they pull off with no money. So clearly there's something in the air in Canada.
Yeah.
Encouraging that kind of creative spirit.
I think, yeah, like I've been Canada several times, and my last two features were shot in Canada, and actually in this particular town where Lulu's from. So I actually got to know some of the people in the town and stuff, and there's a phenomenal amount of creative people there, and especially around film, like in Vancouver, in the Yukon. Like, I haven't been to the East Coast, but I'm sure there is.
Right. Didn't you make your film in Canada?
In the Yukon, yeah, the last two features, actually. Yeah.
Wow. I don't really enjoy it. Vixen Velvet Zombie Massacre.
That's right. Yeah.
That's perfect late night viewing.
Yeah.
I'm very keen to talk about a film that really, really moved me, that I have seen, that is screening this week. And it's very distinct from, I think, everything else we've discussed and maybe everything else playing at the festival. And that
Bill Murray.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
The Bill Murray Stories.
It's beautiful. I'm so keen to. I want to see. I'm probably going to watch it again. I'm keen to see it with an audience.
With an audience, yeah, it'd be really interesting. But he is such a lovable sort of guy, anyhow. So, you know, starting from that mythology, that So I don't know if people have heard of this, but there's these mythologies that, you know, Bill Murray sort of photobombed someone, or Bill Murray turned up at a frat party washing their dishes, or he's eating someone's eclair or whatever.
Yeah, it was the first one I heard. My favorite though is the memory bomb from where they rock up at the party and he's playing the tambourine or something, and it's like, cops are like, all right, so you got to shut this down. The host's like, all right, look, if you want to tell Bill Murray, you go right ahead.
Yeah. I would encourage anyone who sees this film to stay through the credits, because the best part is at the very end, in my opinion.
And I'm very curious, it's so distinct from the other films that are playing and stuff. Why did you program this film?
We often do program a couple of really intimate ones or heartwarming ones. Actually, we've got another one because one of the films dropped out, which is The Green Lights dropped out. The producer went a bit weird on us. Oh, sorry, the distributor. So we replaced it with a really intimate one about... it was all shot on his phone. It was about his dad.
Oh, yeah, that sounded
Eulogy
amazing.
For a Ghost, yeah. And so we do... I mean, we think intimacy in this day and age is subversive. So anything that's a little bit more sort of real and emotionally sort of engaging, we find it subversive, so yeah.
Mm. Something I've been thinking a lot about recently with regard to festivals and the cinephile culture is... how much it's becoming about looking back and nostalgia, where maybe people don't see a big cinema, a future for the traditional idea of cinema as this big art form. And I think that's led to a lot of nostalgia. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, or that attributes to what we love about cinema history have to remind us are a bad thing. But yeah, looking at... there's some films skewing to that trend in this selection, like, I guess, to an extent, the Bill Murray stories, and also, The Green Fog, or Let the Corpses... The Green Fog is an homage to cinema history, as Guy Maddin often makes, and also to Hitchcock's Vertigo, or Let the Corpses Tan, which is like a giallo homage, and also even things like Christmas Blood, I think, seem to be sort of trying to revive like past veins of cinema history. How much, when you're programming, do you like to sort of strike the balance between looking back and trying to look forward and foster new sort of experimental pathways?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You obviously study our program really well. I think you've hit on a really interesting point, right? Because I think cinema and film culture in general is... it's all about sort of revisionist stuff. Like, let's remake comics. You know, it's got a marketing trail that's going to sell. So they want to have definitive financial outcomes, and you do that by picking things that have a marketing trail, not something that's original. And what's interesting about even Mandy or Bill Murray stories, or the reason we like it, because there is an element of that nostalgia, but it's kind of like this pastiche. So even Let the Corpses Tan, it's a pastiche rather than a parody or a replication. So they take influence and do something else with it. So they artistically sort of take influence from it, and they don't mock it. They just kind of use it in a new style. Bill Murray stories, we like that sort of thing because it kind of taps in intertextually into the internet. So we do see it as a forward or a balance between the two, something that's sort of both tapping into that nostalgia but absolutely doing something new, because it's using everyone on the internet. So it's kind of... almost transmedial. It's like a transmedia storytelling situation. So, I always like things that tap into the internet, and wherever I can bring it into the cinema that comes from the internet, I think that's great. That guy who, Mr. Doodleberger or something, or,
right.
Yeah, you know, things like that. Whenever I get those, I try and bring them in.
I think that's interesting approach, because one of the things you find when you watch cinema a lot is, even when it's set in the present day, often they're harking back to the molds of storytelling that they grew up in. So, you know, the internet is, if it's featured in the movie, it's often awkwardly, and usually the characters aren't using that in the way that we all are familiar with the internet, you know, its role in our lives.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think, yeah, that is a way forward for film, is to like respond to the changing environment and bring in the ways of connecting people or telling stories that the internet has introduced to us.
Totally. And I think that's where you find like documentaries very, as always, I think documentaries at the cutting edge of sort of artistic form. So usually find it in docos and in independents that are experimenting. So yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I was intrigued about just the concept of subversive cinema, because stuff is always pushing the boundaries. But what I'm finding in film culture especially is the mainstream is co-opting the subversive increasingly, and what is subversive last year, the year before, becomes mainstream the year after. So how do you find newer spaces and new niches, and you kind of read, like you said, intimate is now subversive, which would have been, you know, the rom-com genre would have been probably co-opted that 10 years ago, and now that's become subversive again.
Rom-coms were kind of subversive once upon a time.
Yeah, exactly, like Clark's and stuff.
But let's bring in, like in the 80s, it's like, let's bring in lots of naked people and just celebrate that in the mainstream.
Yeah, and Australia did a good job at that too, with right. Alvin Purple and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So
I'm just interested in those sort of cycles and see how you sort of establish and identify how these cycles happen and what's now pushing the boundaries versus what is pushing the boundaries 5 years ago, something?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. I guess a lot of it comes from conversation, you know, just discussion with like people like yourselves, and you know, like I'll go away today and think about some of the things you said, and you know, it might influence me for next year. But it's also, you know, looking around you culturally, looking at what other festivals are doing, you know, seeing if something's creating a buzz or something creating annoying people, and you know where it's at. So you always keep your feelers out for everything, and sort of, and then you respond, you know, it just kind of happens. So, yeah,
annoying people is key though, isn't it?
Sorry,
annoying people is key though,
isn't it? People.
Yeah. And I like that reaction though, it's very comforting in some ways.
But to know that you can still be agitated by movies?
I don't think other people are agitated, so because I want to just poke them and, you know, test the agitation sometimes. Yeah. See why they're agitated.
I think it's important. I think, you know, it creates discussion. You know, it's if you don't, it creates a dialogue. If you don't, if everything's just kind of like passive and accepted, and even if everyone just accepted every film, you know, it actually pissed me off. Like, I want people to get upset.
I want people to get. So the festival is coming up. It's starting tomorrow night, running through to Sunday. We know it's at the Factory Theatre, but how do we get there? Where do we get tickets?
So you can hop online to suff.com.au, and it's got ticket links straight through to the Factory Theatre where you get the tickets. You can just rock up and buy tickets there, except Mandy, I'm pretty sure, is already sold out. I think last I checked it was like 300, and I think we're going to push it to 350, but yeah, it'll sell out. To get to the Factory Theatre, it's basically just down Enmore Road, and it turns into Victoria Road, just after Vic on the Park.
It's such a cool space for a festival.
Yeah.
It is a cool space, and that's the last thing I was breaking to touch on, because it's unique in that with some festivals you have venues all over town, but here what I love about the festival isn't always the films, but the environment that happens between and in and outside of the screenings.
Yeah, well that's the thing. If you get sort of film exhaustion, all you got to do is just hang out and have a beer, and I'm sure you're going to be talking to a filmmaker sooner or later or someone, you know, like people are just really friendly And there is that. You can grab something to eat. You could do a workshop or just chill.
It's got that hangout space vibe where, you know, because it's not spread all out over a whole bunch of different venues, that you keep seeing the same people and you have a chat between the sessions. It's great.
So we are very keen. That will be screening throughout the weekend. You can also email glenn@falconscreen.com. That's glenn@falkenscreen.com for tickets to Spirits of the Air and for opening night. Please be the first to shoot in, and we can send those out to you. Stefan, it's been an absolute pleasure. And stay tuned to the podcast. We'll be chatting just for a few more minutes about a few more films.
Cool. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And please tune in next week. We will be chatting with the director of Queer Screen, Lisa, but also running through our reviews from a glorious, marvelous weekend of just so, so many movies. Come join us there. We'll all be there. It's going to be a great weekend. Good night. And so now that we're in our podcast, we can talk about all those films that, you know, we weren't allowed to talk about on air. That you're just, you know, too salacious, and
too much
out
for
there.
Two SER,
too
Hello
out there.
Trauma. You're looking at you, kid.
Oh, we already talked about trauma though. Oh, there's so I saw like we mentioned Green Fog.
Oh yeah,
we talked about.
Oh
earlier.
Yeah, that's such a weird film.
Yeah,
I loved it. It was really interesting because a lot of those films have come out, which you've seen in the past couple of years, where using stock footage. Remember Sammy's film earlier in the year, which also tried to do a similar thing. But this had a really interesting, the sound design in this film was fantastic.
Yeah.
I think that really sells this kind of very eerie, absurdist tone. And yeah, it'll sort of bring me the head of Tim Horton also did a similar thing. So yeah.
I think there were parts of, I mean, we'll get into this in the review. I think there were parts of it where I was kind of drifting off, and there were parts that just hooked me.
Yeah.
Like the way you make the connections to Vertigo, it suddenly comes back to you and you're like, hang on, this is real. And then you get drawn into what the images are doing by themselves, like, yeah, away from that connection.
Which is really interesting, isn't
yeah,
it? It's such
yeah.
an interesting space that he's creating. Yeah. And I think for me, it's really exciting because found footage has carved out such a space in between the art and the film world. Like the clock, is it?
Yeah. Oh, the clock. Yeah, that's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And probably one of our sessions from last year, the Found Footage Festival, who came out.
Well, that's right,
right,
yeah. And Craig Baldwin.
Right.
Like one of my most favorite crazy people on the planet.
I wish I could remember her name, but bouncing off the clock, I saw that there was in the Reality Bites short films, I saw that there was a documentary on a woman who was considered a trailblazer of remix film. Pretty sure.
Not the Karen Perlman one?
Might be. It might be. There's so many films in this program. It's hard
to... We haven't even got to the one about
it's
the
like a
Japanese one. Is that one?
Tokyo Vampire Hotel?
Freaking to talk
oh, yeah.
About.
That one?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
the one.
Yeah, Karen Perlman. She's actually not only is she a good friend of mine, but she's a lecturer at Macquarie University.
Wow, okay.
So she actually came up with... the on-screen draft. I don't know if you've ever heard of that for filmmaking. Like, she came up with this idea of like, well, you know, painters sketch before they paint. Why don't filmmakers just pull out their iPhones and do a draft of
a nasty draft
of the film? Yeah, that's all
and
her. So.
Even people like Alfonso Cuarón do that now.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But it's interesting. It was and it was clever. I'm sure people were doing it, but it was really good that she sort of articulated it and sort of academically wrote papers on it and stuff like that.
I'm sure that filters up.
Yeah,
it influences people. Yeah,
totally. Yeah.
And I know you have to run, but I have the one film I really want to talk about, which I'm curious about. I love the explanatory, very detailed, wonderful titles you get at some of the program. And Tokyo Vampire Hotel. Yes. What could that possibly be about?
Okay, so this is, can I just say, it's, you know, I'm with you about Sion Sono. Sometimes he's hit and miss for me, like. I wasn't a big fan of anti-porno.
Yeah, it's like he's always interesting.
Yeah,
but sometimes not interesting enough for it to feel like you should have spent your time on this.
Exactly. Yeah, and even Guilty of Romance, I was kind of like, yeah, interested, but this one just got my attention straight away. It was like Quentin Tarantino had whispered in his ear or something, and I don't know who else. Like, it's kind of surreal.
Looking at the images in the trailer, it reminds me of like Why Don't You Play in Hell? That kind of excess and of the top aesthetic.
Totally, and even punchier than that as
well.
Okay. Yeah, and the whole thing. All right, so it's about vampires. It's like a vampire fight film or whatever, like, because it's like Romanian vampires, which is funny because I'm Romanian, so that's why I instantly was interested. And then it's like these sort of Japanese vampires, and the whole thing takes place in the vampire's vagina.
All right, sold.
It's just really gory, really bloody, and yeah, and you're just constantly going, I want to know where this goes, like where, and yeah, so you just
were you thinking, where does he get his drugs, and can I have some?
yeah, totally.
Sion Sono, like, I remember he did a short and really absurdist. That was included in the Madly section, I think, a couple of years ago or something, and that was a really interesting, absurdist kind of sex dungeon love take and people falling in love with each other and having orgies in sex dungeons. And that was very subversive and actually very intimate, which is surprising to think about in sex dungeons.
He's a real romantic. Everyone should check out Love Exposure. Right? Yes. He's such a contradictory kind of voice in a lot of ways.
But yeah.
Always interesting. Another film that sort of ties into, I guess, the retro vibe I was talking about earlier, but sounds really interesting, is Lutz.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cool. Yeah. That's, again, yeah, that, yeah, actually, really good point. Yeah, I think we should contact you before we release our program. Because I always get a question of like, what's the theme for this year? I was like, just pick stuff. Yeah. You always pick themes. It's awesome. Yeah.
This is the theme.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. It had me hooked the whole time, and I don't want to say too much with this one because you have to experience it.
Yeah.
But all I can say is that, like, I was just, it had me there. It had me there. And at times I was frustrated because I was like, are you going to give me something? And then, yeah. And so it's very much that 70s sort of structure, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
And managed to sort of manipulate you just in the right way.
Yeah. It's interesting that style's coming back now because I think reading reviews of the new Suspiria, it also seems to be looking to Fassbinder and Zelowski
in a
horror context.
Yeah, you know. Wow, interesting. Yeah,
minimalist, Germanic style. Yeah.
They're screening a lot of Fassbinder in the festivals now. The MIFF screened the Fassbinder retrospective, and I think it's now coming back in vogue in a really weird way. I want to touch upon a really, I guess, a normalish film based on a lot of the weird ones, An Evening with Beverly Loughlin, which seemed to be like, if people want to check out a normal film and not get weirded out, not that you shouldn't be, but again, you know.
This is definitely the place to be weirded out, and you will thoroughly enjoy being weird.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. But like, you know,
I was going to say, like, you're lying to the audience, but yeah.
Yeah. But like, some people might want something normal with Aubrey Plaza in it and just be like, that's their level of extreme, you know? Some people see Aubrey Plaza and that's extreme for them.
That's right. If you're normal, this will be extreme for you.
I always bring friends each year and they always say, well, what should I see? Like, this is my level of what I can do. It's like, okay, here's one we can see together. And my other mate, it's going to be, no, we're seeing, you know, the dramas of the world.
This is definitely a date film. You could take a date to An Evening with Beverly Loughlin. You've seen it?
No. I'm just sort of trying to throw a bone to some of the normal people out there.
No, that's really. But it's. I can say. It's a. One thing that it's a love story. It's a love story. So you're right. You're completely on the money. It's a love story, but it's the weirdest love story ever. And everyone in it is. It's they're just not attractive, but they're treated like attractive, like.
Okay.
Like so it's really interesting.
Like
that
Shallow Hole in a way. Shallow Hell.
More like. It sounds like a better film than Shallow Hell.
It's more like It's more like the humor is definitely that because it's got Jermaine Clement in it.
So
it's got that New Zealand sort of dry humor, but it's kind of like, the guy from
yes.
Last year we you know what? I'm going to turn to the program. And I will get the guy's name.
Okay. We're all very professional here.
Simon was telling us before I came in, you know, before we started recording, that he's had a pretty long day and long weekend. So
we appreciate being here for it's a crazy time of year.
Craig Robinson.
Craig Robinson.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
it's a hot tub time machine.
Yeah, but in this film he's treated like a sex god. You know what I mean? Like and that's the beauty about this. It's kind of like inverts a lot of conventions, but it's played really straight and it's played by it's got a lot of comedians in it.
I think that's interesting because I think that's kind of subversive and also empowering in a way, because I think that's the way that we regular people see each other when we're turned on.
Well, that's right. Yeah, no, that's right. And that's why, like, it actually is a love story, and he really did, the way he sort of framed it, he did that in all earnestness, but it is funny.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah.
You know which movie to take your date to if you have a date for this weekend. If you don't, you still have time.
We'll make one at Sydney Underground Film Festival.
We'll be your date.
Don't push your luck.
We'll all be there, so we'll be.
Yeah.
And there's another film I was keen to ask about, the appropriately named Downrange.
Oh, yeah.
About, I like my slasher horrors.
Yeah.
I like my gore fests. Yeah. And obviously, you know, teens getting lost in the woods or a highway is
again, this is again that sort of throwback. So, I didn't realize how many we have. Even Revenge,
Ryohei Kitamura is the director. He's a pretty wild guy. He's had a kind of up and down career. But like, I recommend people check out Versus, a Japanese movie he made, which is just a crazy action movie. Downrange sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's about these kids that got caught sort of in the desert or whatever, in cars broken down or whatever, and then all of a sudden there's this sniper and starts taking them out, so they're caught in this sort of standoff. So yeah, and the whole film revolves around that. It's really interesting. High tension sort of,
right, high tension or high tension.
Yeah. You remember that one?
I think maybe it's just in the general culture at the moment, because even when you look to, more mainstream cinema releases coming out, we've got, as I said, mentioned before, the Suspiria, and we've also got a new Halloween.
Yeah.
The cycles going around again to the 70s, I think.
I wonder if that's because Netflix is the new drive-in. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way, but that's so true.
Right. Yeah. Suddenly the appeal of things that were big in the 70s.
It's coming back, exploitation and stuff like,
And that combined with, us living in an era where something that's been shown to sell in the past is more of is going to get a chance again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's considered a show bad.
That's right. Same, but different.
Yeah.
Well, I'm keen for that one. I'm keen for so many this weekend, Stefan. It's been an absolute pleasure. We can't wait to share some films, share a Young Henry's, share everything Marrickville.
It's actually Brooklyn this year.
Brooklyn. Share Brooklyn. We'll say Young Henry's can shove off back to Sydney Film Fest.
Oh, great work, Glenn.
We don't mind Young Henry's, but Brooklyn's.
But Brooklyn's our favorite. Friendship ended with Young Henry's.
I'm not lying.
Brooklyn is our best friend.
I'm not lying when I say I actually do have Brooklyn in the fridge. So I'm really.
Okay, cool.
So thank you. And yes, those tickets, if you do want to reach out for Spirits of the Air and opening night, glenn@falconscreen.com. The email is also on the Film Fight Club page on the 2SER site. Be the first and come join us. And we can't wait to share some films.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
See you there.
Crimson, primordial sky, the wretched warlock reached into the dark embrace.
So that is from Mandy. It will be screening on the final night at the Sydney Underground Film Festival. It was nice. It's always nice having Stefan on. He's like, no hyperbole, just such a top bloke.
We were saying before while he was out of the studio that it's always an absolute pleasure to have him on the show. Virat commented that like it never feels like an effort to put this show together when Stefan's on, because he's such a chill guy.
I hope you're not listening, Stefan. We're not going to praise you again.
I have to praise you like I should.
All the reviews are next week, so we'll be like, we like this, we didn't like this, but
we are keen.
Stefan are in.
Yeah, the reviews are in, and like, you know, this is the kind of guy that I feel like people and you know what he stands for, not just the guy, but what he's done.
Yeah,
and I think needs to be supported. It's Stefan and his festival are so unpretentious, but are also like standing up for real art.
I agree. I think that's the thing. There's no actually frills about it. And I think there's no grandstanding, which I think is very important. It's like, you know, this is what it takes and this is who I am. And, you know, just be that. There's no actual, you know, stakes moment. There's no bite-sized headline-grabbing, quote, popcorn moments. It's just, cool, chill man. Let's do this.
And we have to realize that he and Catherine Berger, who's the festival director and the volunteers work all year on putting this together. It's such a labor of love. And I was talking to another reviewer the other night who interviewed Stefan previously in relation to this upcoming festival. And I think enough time has passed into the film festival that I can make a criticism that we like the hub, but sometimes there's a rope line with like five people
exactly.
And a couple of directors
it's
behind it.
It's too corporatized. When we were in Melbourne, we were just blown away by how their equivalent of the hub, which is the festival lounge at the Forum Theatre, is completely open. Anyone, you know, they don't close it off for sponsors, and they do have parties in there where the crew of a new Australian film premiering goes in, but they're allowed to hobnob with the regular plebeians,
mingle with the peasants.
Yeah, it's sad that Sydney Film Festival either feels it has to or has to because of economic realities I'm not privy to, cut things off and corporatize. But I think anything that doesn't make people feel welcome at a festival is a problem.
And there's no rope line at the Sydney Underground Film Festival. There's no rope. The rope is...
Yeah.
It's just beanbags. No rope.
Because, well, the Sydney Underground
yes,
Film Festival, it's an entirely different model because it barely has corporate sponsors, you know, whereas Sydney Underground Film Festival has to... Sydney Film Festival has to because it's a huge undertaking. But nonetheless, that's not just to say that the way that this kind of thing is implemented is ideal, because it really isn't.
But I think you raised a good point, and I think it's interesting to sort of acknowledge that, where the people who go to festivals are already probably, you know, cinephiles like us. We're the hardcore people. And I think if people like us or those people don't have access to, you know, filmmakers or like people we look up to, then who does have access?
And I'm not exaggerating, I've never been in an environment of the festival on the scale in Australia where it has been so inclusive, and that I've never felt that I have no reason not to go up to a random stranger, whether it be a filmmaker or otherwise, to talk. And I have made friends who I have seen at other festivals. We started discussing the genesis of the show at the Underground Film Festival some time back.
Yeah, that's right.
A wonderful, you know, I mean, we talk about it like at a film festival, it's like a metal gig. If you've ever been to a metal gig, you'll know.
It's got that sense of community. Yeah. And like there's something very metal about Sydney Underground Film Festival as well. You do tend to catch people in metal shirts that kind of crowd come out. It's Marrickville, it's punk, it's DIY, it's a little bit grungy.
Can we acknowledge that all of us just pictured Glenn right now at a metal gig? And I do not know what that would look like.
Glenn's a metalhead, mate.
He used to be a big metal guy, right?
I'm a punk fan, but I do like my metal.
Yeah, cool. It's so weird to me that Glenn likes Celine Dion and Shania Twain and Taylor Swift and punk and metal.
Sex Pistols is still my favorite band.
Yeah, that's true. But like, I was like, wait, hang on. When last week we were talking about Joseph Kahn, and you mentioned, I mentioned to Steve from 2SER, this guy directed Bodied, and he was like, oh yeah, he made that really good Faith No More video. And Glenn's like, oh, I love Faith No More. And then my mind was struggling to be like, how can someone love Taylor Swift and Faith No More?
Well, Joseph Kahn did a lot of the Taylor Swift video clips.
He did as well. That's right. So I guess Joseph Kahn also loves Faith No More and Taylor Swift. So I have a lot to learn.
Yeah, what we're just trying to say is that Glenn has multiple lives, like a cat. And we just don't know all of these lives.
Dear listeners, Glenn has lived, like, you mentioned a country, and he's like, oh yeah, I lived there for a year. And it's like, how did that happen? How is this guy's barely been on Earth long enough to have lived in all these countries, and yet...
Not just lived in multiple countries, had multiple careers, and actually lived different lives, like a super spy or something.
He's an international man of mystery.
He literally is.
It's very kind. You'll see me at the Sydney Underground Film Festival with sunglasses and just like shifting, walking around, always up against the wall.
Oh, I mean, can we just mention also your mystery and intrigue is heightened by the way you take photographs and selfies. It's kind of hard.
Oh yeah, he always takes photos where you can only see the top part of his head.
Yeah, just like, the top
and
forehead.
Like his eyes.
And his eyes,
can't see
which are covered with sunglasses every time. So you can never...
Even when they're not covered with sunglasses, it's still just like, who is this dashing forehead eyebrow man?
The truth is, there is no lower half to my face, which is why I'm on radio and not TV. It's very disconcerting for people, so I just like to take photos with just the nose
right
up.
Right.
It's
I saw a terrible French film about this that we covered when it was one of the Alliance Française Film Festival movies, but it showed a recent run in Dundee Newtown. So if anyone saw See You Up There, just picture Glenn as the guy who wears the masks.
That was a terrible movie.
The face. Did you see it?
I know, yeah.
It's so bad. So bad.
Oh, yeah.
Champagne was good, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was bad.
I missed that one. I'm not afraid. I shouldn't say I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
But Suspiria is coming back.
Do be afraid.
Yes. Suspiria, which screened last year at the Underground Film Festival.
And it's screening, Monster Fest? It's screening also at the Italian Film Festival, which is now on. I should give a little bit of a plug to that. That's just open now. And there's a bunch of films I want to see in there. Happy as Lazaro.
Paolo Sorrentino?
Yeah, Paolo Sorrentino's movie about Silvio Berlusconi. And they've also got Dogman, which I caught in Melbourne, and I thought it was pretty good, decent. The closing night film is the 4K restoration of the original Suspiria. So if you haven't seen that and you want to catch it before Luca Guadagnino's radical reinterpretation comes out on the 8th of November, then yeah, come in, give it a spin. I think that we've only touched on a little bit, but it's an embarrassment of riches, the lineup this year. It's just absolutely massive.
FPL Cinemas everywhere.
Yeah.
I've got the 4K restoration physically in my hands yesterday, and it felt surreal.
But if you want to see it at a cinema, and not with
Virat's living room.
We can go to Virat's living room, but you can't. So.
The problem is...
Sorry, Lucia, listen.
Yeah, everyone knows that I can't watch horror, so... I think just holding Suspiria was like...
Fortunately, Suspiria is not very scary at all.
Everyone's told me ever since I shared that thing. So maybe, fingers crossed, if people support me and you sort of see me in there, maybe...
Yeah, you'll get through it.
I'll get through it.
Well, I'm not sure I'm actually going to watch it with you because I haven't seen it and I've been told I should watch the remake first.
No. What I've heard about the remake, I've heard it's really... like it's very different and also touching on... like bouncing ideas off the original into something big. Like, it's got to be really different. The original is so threadbare. It's like 90 minutes, and it's almost all aesthetics. The plot and characterization are laughable and really not the reason you're watching the film, whereas the new one is apparently really dense and 2.5 hours long. So it's got to be completely, completely different in big ways.
And apparently the original is just a B-movie aesthetic.
It's totally a B-movie with a aesthetic.
More kish kind of thing.
It'd be great to... You know what would be great? If when we all catch it, we can continue this conversation and have a discussion on Suspiria after the Italian Film Festival premiere. So if listeners, you want to catch it around then, this can be like our book club.
Hello, Alex. Hello, Nicholas.
First week of October, discussing Suspiria on the show.
And speaking of festivals, the Pacifica Film Fest running the exact same time as the Sydney Underground Film Festival, which focuses on films and stories around the Pacific Islands, and I caught one film that have its world premiere at Pacifica last week. Australian director Joanna Lester has made a film about the first national Papua New Guinean women's rugby league team to compete in the World Rugby League World Cup. As I learned, PNG is the only country in the world when rugby league is the national sport. There's some of the crew, including the team captain, Kathy, were out here. Incidentally, the first Sydney screening was timed with the first week of the NRL Holden Women's Inaugural Premiership. So I quite enjoyed that. It was a very interesting documentary, and that'll be screening at Pacifica in the coming days. So it's in their third year, so please do check it out.
Going from Australia to the world. Right now, Toronto International Film Festival is happening in Toronto. Course,
and Malcolm Turnbull's there. Did you see this? He's just like he's hanging out now.
Yeah, I mean, he's done his part. So, hello, Malcolm. And the new movie by director Anurag Kashyap is screening at Toronto, the guy who did Gangs of Wasseypur. And he's moved away from dark, gritty dramas and made a happy rom com with 14 songs.
Right, wow.
Which I am very surprised. So, it is a very big change of pace. I'm excited to see what he does in the happy Bollywood space because he's never done that. So, and it's going to be weird because I keep thinking about him, somebody trying to shoot someone and nobody's going to do that in this movie. Anyway, back to Australia.
Moving on from Toronto, actually a bit of a serious subject we want to touch on. Earlier in the year, we interviewed director Trevor Burney, who was out here for the Irish Film Festival, he produced a film, No Stone Unturned. He co-produced it with Alex Gibney. It is about the 1994 Loughlin Island massacre in Northern Ireland, where four Catholic members of a small community were killed while watching a game. The murders have been solved. Charges have not been laid. Gibney's film and Trevor's film focused on the investigation. A, the investigation into the murders. B, why there had been no charges laid. But C, alleged collusion between the police and those allegedly or purportedly responsible. The reason we bring this up is that a few days ago, Trevor Burney and his filmmaking partner Bruce McCaffrey were arrested by the police in relation to documents that were uncovered during the film and publicized in the course of the film and Trevor's own investigation. As I understand, having spoken with the Irish Film Festival crew here, they were let go, charges have not been laid, but it is still an ongoing issue. Certainly the case, and a major criticism of the documentary was that the police were more focused on their investigation and those alike as opposed to actually solving the murders. So it's a shameful and awful period in the history of Ireland. And just a shout out, and the reason we bring this up is just a shout out to Trevor. He's a top bloke, and it's a terrible thing to go through, to spend 24 to 48 hours in a prison cell.
He's a really nice guy, personally. That makes no difference, obviously, to whether or not it's right, you know, for him to be persecuted for seeking the truth. But nonetheless, it's, you know, it's sad to think a good man with good intentions is being put through this.
So shout out of solidarity to our friends very, very, very far away, but certainly in our thoughts. They're back on Twitter, so active and fighting the good fight.
Yeah, keep it up, guys.
Keep it up. So that's all for this week. We were back, as mentioned, with the director of Queer Screen, Lisa, coming week talking about Suff Reviews and all. But before we go, just as a small plug for something. So myself and a few others and collaboratively have been working on a new platform, which we're very excited to talk about. It's called Festivez, and essentially, it's a platform for Australian film festivals. It lists every festival and event or fest event in the country. You can go on it, register, find new stuff, wishlist what you want. But the cool thing is that writers can upload their own content related to festivals, but festivals can also edit and add their own events. And it's, I think, a way to connect with fans.
Glenn's given it to us for a bit of a road test before launching it, and I can confirm that it's better than Facebook for keeping up to date with film festivals and events. And so if that's the kind of thing you like to do, and, you know, everyone knows the best thing to use Facebook for these days is just keep track of events, then maybe you should give Festivez a shot. I recommend it.
I really commend Glenn, because I don't think there was anything like this in the space before about collectively bringing all the festivals together on one platform where you can, for a cinephile, I think that's the biggest thing on your calendar. You just want to look out when the next festival is coming up. And there was no easy way to keep track of so many festivals happening almost all the same time, and you never knew when something was on. And now you don't have to rely on film Twitter anymore. You can rely on Festivez. How beautiful is that?
So please do look it up. The site is Festivez, FESTEVEZ.com. The handle's Festivez Film for Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And we hope to see you at a festival, whether it be Suff or Pacifica or Queer Screen or Antenna, which we'll be discussing in the coming weeks, Documentary Film Festival. Or the Italian Film Festival.
Any of these. Just keep going to interesting films, please. I think the cinema community thanks you.
Yeah, support your local cinema. And go to places, go to these weird...
And support interesting films at your local cinema.
Yeah.
It's going to be a ball.
It's going to be a good time to enjoy movies.
Good night.